Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryan Karavavahai Tejasvi Navaditamastu Mavidivishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila, Chapter 17, Pastimes of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his youth, continuing with the summary from the Chaitanya Bhagwat, right? Isn't it? Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. Okay. Page 122. The devotees informed Advaita of the Lord's love for Krishna, and Advaita was delighted on hearing it. Advaita then told all the devotees about his dream, and the devotees happily chanted the names of Krishna. Whenever the Lord saw Shivas and the other devotees, he offered them obeisances, and the devotees in turn blessed him. The Lord accepted their good wishes and exhibited in various ways the ideal example of service to the Vaishnavas, right? Because Vaishnav Seva is one of the main aspects, right? The devotees offered him their blessings and became hopeful of his advancement in Krishna consciousness. After hearing the Lord's grief caused by the misbehavior of the Vaishnav haters and slandering atheists residing in Navadvip, the Lord gave them his assurance and became filled with anger against the Pashandis. Presuming that the Lord was afflicted with nervous malady, ignorant persons requested Mother Sachi to arrange for his medical treatment. One day, Srivas went to the Lord's house and beheld on the Lord's person prevalent signs of the highest devotion, and the Lord embraced Srivas on hearing his declaration to that effect. Yes, it seems
because
to be...
English is simpler.
No, well, probably because it's written in Bengali. And so then it's been translated. Yeah, because I think Chaitanya Bhagavati, he would have done it in Bengali. He wouldn't have been English.
Otherwise, we can understand easily.
Yes, yes. That you mentioned, it's like, yeah, right. But he would have written in Bengali. So this would have been translated. On hearing Shivas describe her son's love for Krishna, Mother Sachi gave up her suspicion that her son was suffering from nervous malady. The Lord visited the home of Advaita in the company of Gadadhara. Though fully absorbed in the ecstasy of worshipping Krishna, Advaita immediately worshipped the feet of the Lord and offered prayers to the Lord. Gadadhara, who enjoyed the confidence of the Lord, prevented the same and expressed his surprise. When the Lord gained his eternal consciousness, eternal consciousness, saw Advaita offering him prayers, he externally concealed his own identity while he internally revealed himself to Advaita. Advaita then went to Shantipur to test the magnanimous nature of the Lord's appearance. The Lord daily engaged in glorifying Krishna in the company of the devotees and became overwhelmed due to love and separation. The Lord described to his intimate devotees his vision in the neighborhood of Kanai Natchala. And during his return from Gaya, when he saw Krishna as a dawning youth with the blackish complexion of the tamal tree and the hue of fresh clouds, and he swooned away during the recital. The devotees praised the Lord with great joy when he regained his external consciousness. Even after returning home, the Lord constantly manifested a state of overpowering bliss and the tendency to inquire from all persons about Krishna. One day, on hearing from Gadadhara that Krishna dwelt in his heart, the Lord attempted to tear open his own heart with his fingernails and could be induced to be patient only by Gadadhara's persuasions, for which Sachidevi, who was most devotedly attached to her son, warmly praised Gadadhara's act. Sachidevi manifested reverential fear for her son rather than motherly affection. In the company of his devotees and in his own house, the Lord listened in the evenings to the kirtan performance of Mukunda. Thus, the performance of all-night kirtan was begun. The Prashandis were angered by such interruption to their pleasure of sleep. They were filled with anger, especially against Srivas, which led them to spread the false rumors of the king's displeasure with Srivas. The omniscient Lord, who is affectionate to his devotees, appeared in his four-armed divine form before Srivas, where the latter was engaged in his house in worshipping Sri Nrisimhadeva and encouraged him by his words of mercy. Srivas then realized that the Lord was Krishna himself and glorified him. On hearing the prayers of Srivas, the Lord manifested his own form and commanded Srivas and his wife to worship him. Srivas and all his family members worshipped the Lord and expressed their humility. The Lord then removed Srivas's fears with his words of assurance. On the order of the Lord, Sri Narayani, the daughter of Srivas's brother, cried and fell unconscious while chanting the name of Krishna. Srivas was relieved of all his fears of the Prashandis by beholding all these divine manifestations and chanted the glories of the Lord. Srivas was permitted to see a manifestation of the Lord's opulences, which are difficult for even the Vedas to behold. The Lord forbade Srivas from revealing his confidential manifestation. The Lord returned home after giving Srivas his assurance of support against all danger. The author then glorifies Srivas's household, which fully engaged in the service of Krishna, and declares that the service of Krishna's devotees is the only means of attaining Krishna's service. The author then describes how he received the order of Nityananda to write this book. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, then he was a great scholar. So, you know, he was the greatest at that time in India. And so, but he gained the mercy of Lord Chaitanya and became a great devotee. So Srila Prabhupada points out that happened, it couldn't happen, right? Because he was a big academic. And the point is academics don't become devotees. It was just that straightforward, right? Because of their pride, they think by their intelligence they can know anything and everything. Though in their own institution, they can only speak in the exact area what they did their thesis in. Like, let's say they did their thesis in the behavior of tsetse flies during the rainy season in northern Zimbabwe. They wouldn't be able to give an authoritative statement for any other season, or for southern Zimbabwe, or for you know in Congo. That's the way it is. But somehow or another, if it's someone from outside the academy, you know, or just students, oh, they're so proud, like they know everything. It's a disease. And so it's not a new thing. It's not that we're saying about, you know, what's going on now. This has always gone on. So we see at the time of Lord Chaitanya 500 years ago, this is the problem. We go back to the Vedic age. Gotama's son had the same problem. Right? So it's a problem. Generally, those who are scholars, they cannot become devotees. So when it says someone's a jnani, that they are pious and surrendered, that does not mean a scholar. It means someone who appreciates the Lord and his position and feels that gratefulness towards the Lord, therefore he surrenders. That's a jnani. That's the meaning of that term. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So it's very important to note like that. So then, why did he get Lord Chaitanya's mercy? That will be the main question. It's because his brother-in-law, who is his brother?
Gopinath
Acharya. he was hoping that he would somehow or another become Krishna conscious. Then when Lord Chaitanya came, and then he spoke, then because of the blessing of his brother-in-law, that's why he got. And then from now becoming a pure devotee, then Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya understood that this is only because of the blessings of Gopinathacharya. And so then he said this to Lord Chaitanya. Gopinathacharya was also about. And Lord Chaitanya was very pleased. Right? So this whole point of Lord Chaitanya and how he deals with the Vaishnavas, it is the only way to get Krishna's mercy. There isn't something else. Right? But that means one serving the instruction of the pure devotees. So then we see Srila Prabhupada, the Acharyas, then they're giving us the method. How? By chanting, by hearing these pastimes, by associating with devotees, serving the Vaishnavas. In this way, then one will advance, and Krishna will be pleased with that sincerity to try to serve the Vaishnavas. Right? Then one can move forward, then one can get the taste for the holy name in that. So that's the system, how it works. And then having this mercy, one naturally gives that to the other living entities through the Sankirtan mission. Is that? So we see Lord Chaitanya himself, how he deals, and that then, you know, it's a very important aspect. That's why he's glorifying the devotees. When Mahaprabhu understood that Nityananda Prabhu arrived at the house of Nandanacharya, he immediately went there with his associates and offered him obeisances. Sri Nityananda Prabhu, who is non-different from Sri Baladev, enacted the pastimes of relishing the beauty of his eternally worshipable Sri Gaurasundara through all his senses. In order to reveal the glories of Nityananda Prabhu, Sri Gaurasundara, who is the supersoul of everyone, instructed Srivas to recite a verse from Srimad Bhagavatam. Understanding the hint of the Lord, Srivas recited a verse describing Krishna's Vrindavan pastimes, whereupon Sri Nityananda, who is the personification of ecstatic love, fell unconscious to the ground. According to the instructions of Mahaprabhu, Srivas Pandit continued reciting verses, and after some time Nityananda Prabhu regained his consciousness, yet he again fell to the ground. Everyone became frightened and prayed to Krishna for his protection. When various transformations of love of God manifest in the body of Nityananda, everyone assembled there became stunned on seeing those symptoms and attempted to hold him still. When they failed in their attempts, Mahaprabhu personally took Nityananda on his lap. After a while, when Nityananda regained his external consciousness, the Vaishnavas became jubilant. When Gadadhar, who knows Nityananda's glories, saw the apparent contradiction, in other words, when he saw the same Nityananda, who in the form of Ananta serves Gaurasundara in his different forms, is today lying in the lap of Mahaprabhu, he began to smile within his mind. Right? Because Krishna sits on Sesha, but in this case, Lord Chaitanya is holding Nityananda Prabhu, so Sesha is sitting on Vishnu, right? So then Gadadhar is smiling at this. Yeah. But he says within his mind. After seeing Nityananda, Gaurasundara disclosed Nityananda's confidential characteristics through various words of praise. After the two sufficiently conversed with each other through gesture, the Lord asked Nityananda where he came from. While describing his travels to the holy places, Nityananda Prabhu revealed the purpose of Mahaprabhu's appearance. In other words, he personally disclosed that Mahaprabhu is non-different from the son of Nanda Maharaj and has now appeared in Navadvip in his most magnanimous form. On hearing the conversation between Mahaprabhu and Nityananda, the devotees began to contemplate in various ways. Although they did not understand the confidential meaning of their conversation, they nevertheless understood that both were long known to each other and both were worshipable lords. Although Nityananda Prabhu belongs to the category of worshipable, he eternally engages in various services to Sri Gaurasundara, who is non-different from the son of Nanda Maharaj. No one is qualified to serve Gaurasundara without the mercy of Nityananda, because he's the supreme personality of servitor Godhead. So if it's to serve the Lord, you have to get his mercy. Right? So that's why, by His grace, you can serve if you've given up material, interest. Because then you can actually be absorbed. So that's His mercy that He gives. Because otherwise, one will be distracted by the mundane and just be absorbed in that. So we say I can do this service. But the point is are we always engaged in that service? And so that's determined by how much we have material desire or not. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's the... Yeah. The body of Nityananda Prabhu is non-different from that of Sri Gaurasundara. Those who desire to cross the ocean of material existence and merge in the ocean of devotional service should take shelter of the lotus feet of Sri Nityananda, for this is the only means to achieve the desired goal. Right? So you can merge in the ocean of devotional service, but not into the Brahma Jyoti or the Lord. Right? One day, during his Navadvipa pastimes, Sriman Mahaprabhu...
I'll
just keep reading.
Yes.
One day during his Navadvipa pastimes, Sriman Mahaprabhu proposed to Nityananda to celebrate Vyas Puja. Understanding the intention of Mahaprabhu, Nityananda Prabhu expressed his desire to observe Vyasa Puja at the house of Srivas. When Mahaprabhu asked Srivas to take responsibility of this important event, he happily agreed. Being pleased by the words of Srivas, Sriman Mahaprabhu led Nityananda and others to Srivas's house, where they locked the door from inside and began to perform the Adivas Kirtan for the celebration of Vyas Puja. In order to manifest the Baladev feature of Nityananda Prabhu, the Lord became absorbed in the mood of Baladev and suddenly sat down on the Simhasana. The Lord then demanded Baladev's plow and club from Nityananda Prabhu, who immediately gave the plow and club in his hands. Then Nityananda Prabhu placed his hand on the hand of Mahaprabhu. When Nityananda Prabhu placed his hand on the hand of Mahaprabhu, some directly saw a plow and club, and some only saw their hands. Seemed to have worked. We just kept reading. Everything worked out, right? When Mahaprabhu asked for Varuna, or wine, in the moon of Balaram, all the devotees at first became perplexed, and later on they gave him some Ganges water. Mahaprabhu also considered it wine and drank it. In order to please Mahaprabhu in that particular mood, the devotees began to glorify Baladev. When Mahaprabhu repeatedly called out, "Nada, Nada," the devotees were unable to understand who the Lord was addressing, and therefore they asked Mahaprabhu. Mahaprabhu said, "Advaitacharya is Nada. Due to Advaita's loud call, I have descended from Goloka to this world in order to preach the congregational chanting of the Lord's holy name, which is the religion of this age. I will distribute love and devotion that is rare even for the demigods headed by Lord Brahma to everyone except those who are intoxicated with education, wealth, fame, austerity, and high birth, and offensive to Vaishnavas." On hearing these words of the Lord, all the devotees became very happy. Right? So it's not that it's not a problem if one is educated or wealthy, famous, austere, high birth, or like that. That's not a problem. The problem is if they're intoxicated with that. Right? So the point is not that someone's a scholar. That's the problem. It's that they're proud of that. They're intoxicated by that. They feel that they're special and unique because of this. Right? But so that's the problem. And so, as he's pointed out, everybody is open to getting except these people. If they're proud of, because education is knowledge, wealth, fame, austerity, high birth. These are all Krishna's opulences. So if they have these opulences and they're proud of them, like that, and intoxicated with that, then the difficulty is whose opulences are they? So how will they know the Lord if they have that opulence of the Lord, and they think that they're special? They have to think that the Lord is special. That's the whole point. Does that make sense? So, by the grace of the devotees, then they may have that proper understanding. And when they have that proper mentality, then they can get the mercy of the Lord. But it's a very... Is that,
accepting that it's the Lord's opulences will result in a complete loss of identity. So they're just not going to do it.
Yeah, because the problem is that they think that the knowledge is theirs. Yeah, exactly. They don't want to offer to anybody else. You know? Okay. So that's the... And in that process of their knowledge, they'll always ignore the Lord. That's the difficulty. You know, if they're looking at something, they'll look at everything and go back to the point where it's obvious it comes from the Lord, and then they'll say no. Like if I say, oh... It means that the problem will be, there's God. Oh, that's just sentiment. Right? But the point is they'll go back to the point and say, oh, there's no God. Even though there's obvious evidence that there would be. Right? And so, then they'll say, no, it's just sentiment. So that's the difficulty. They're complaining about people being sentimentalist when they're very sentimental themselves. Right, according to their own position, their own authority, they're quite intoxicated by that, as I said. So that's the difficulty, is they just won't accept that there's something beyond. Right? No, it's by intelligence, it must be this, it must be that. You know? So yeah, so that's the problem. Because it's just like, let's say you have that example, I think it was Newton. Then he made a mechanical structure of the universe, and it's mechanical, so he could move some gears and the planets would move and all that according to their understanding at that time, and it was quite well done. So then one of his associates came by and he showed it to him, and he says, wow, this is amazing, who made this? And Newton said, nobody made it. I said, it just appeared here, like that, you know? Like, I don't know, I just walked in, it was here. And this man said, don't be stupid, you know, if it's something there, it has to come from somewhere, someone had to make it. He says, no, it just appeared, no one made it. And the guy got angry, you're not being logical, I thought you were such an intelligent man, and this and that, going on and on and on. Newton says, right, exactly. You're the one that says there's no God, this whole universe is there, and you say no one made it. So, who's the sentimentalist? Who's the idiot here? So that's the problem. It's a bias. So that's why we say so-called intellectuals. Right? If they can accommodate the understanding of the Lord in that, then they're actually an intellectual. But if not, then they're just what do you call it? What's it? Deophobes?
Maya
Patitagana. Yes, Maya Patitagana. So it's a problem. When Mahaprabhu embraced the devotees with love and begged pardon for his own restlessness, the devotees could not control their laughter. Nityananda Prabhu became overwhelmed with the mellows of ecstatic love and began to exhibit restlessness. Mahaprabhu pacified him properly and returned to his house. All the devotees then returned to their respective homes. Nityananda Prabhu, however, stayed at the house of Shrivas, and at night he roared loudly and broke his sannyas danda and water pot. Then, when Ramai Pandit saw this the next morning, he informed Shrivas, who sent Ramai to inform Mahaprabhu. As soon as Mahaprabhu heard this, he came there with his followers, picked up the pieces of the broken danda, and went to take bath in the Ganges with Nityananda. He then threw those pieces into the Ganges. When Nityananda Prabhu began to manifest various restless behavior while taking bath, Mahaprabhu instructed Nityananda to quickly complete his bath and prepare for celebrating Vyas Puja. Thereafter, Nityananda returned home with Mahaprabhu, right? Because the Vyas Puja, the Adivas is generally done in the evening before. So that wasn't the time for the Vyas Puja, it was for the next day. Gradually all the devotees began to assemble and engage in chanting the holy names of Krishna. After Shiva's pandit, the priest of the Yaspuja ceremony, duly performed all the required formalities. He gave Nityananda a flower garden to place on Vyasadeva and told him to offer his respectful obeisances to Vyasadeva while chanting mantras. Nityananda Prabhu held the garland in his hand and began to look all around. When Shiva's pandit informed Mahaprabhu about Nityananda's behavior, Mahaprabhu ordered Nityananda Prabhu to worship Vyasadeva. Nityananda Prabhu then placed the garland on the head of Mahaprabhu, who immediately manifested his six-armed form. As soon as Nityananda Prabhu saw the conch, disc, and other weapons in the hands of that six-armed form, he immediately fell unconscious to the ground. While trying to help Nityananda regain his consciousness, Mahaprabhu said that without the mercy of Nityananda, no one can achieve love and devotion. One who is envious of Nityananda cannot become dear to Mahaprabhu, even by worshipping Mahaprabhu. On hearing the words of Gaurasundara, Nityananda regained consciousness and became very pleased by seeing the six-armed form. Nityananda Prabhu is non-different from Balaram, and as the eternal basis of everything, he is the only cause of creation, maintenance, and annihilation. Yet it is his eternal nature to teach everyone to become servants of Krishna in each of his incarnations. Although Balaram appeared as the elder brother of Krishna during his incarnation, he did not give up the mood of servitorship from his heart. It is extremely foolish and offensive to discriminate between Balaram and Nityananda. If one shows disrespect to the servitor personality of Godhead, then he commits an offense at the feet of Vishnu. Although Goddess Lakshmi is worshipped by the demigods headed by Brahma and Shiva, she is attached to the service of the lotus feet of the Lord. Similarly, the eternal characteristic of the omnipotent Baladeva is to serve the personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna, to sing the glories. Lord, because of Krishna, Krishna Chandra, the eternally worshipper Lord Krishna Chandra. I was thinking there needs to be a period there somewhere. It is also the eternal nature of this served personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna, to sing the glories of the servitor personality of Godhead. Although in the spiritual realm they continually see each other, the pastimes they perform in their various incarnations are all inconceivable. The pastimes of the Supreme Lord are the Vedas. One cannot understand them without engaging the process of devotional service. So the Vedas are simply the pastimes of the Lord, because they're just describing the Lord and his glories. So what are these glories? His different activities, his particular name, form, qualities, and pastimes, and how he's engaging in interaction with devotees. Right? How the spiritual world is there, the qualities that are there, the material world is creation, maintenance, and destruction. How Krishna is controlling all this, how he's controlling all the enemies, energies. So it means it's his pastimes. The Vedas are just describing his pastimes. So if you see it as something else, you know, just karma kanda, jnana kanda, upasana kanda, and you're not worshipping Krishna, you're not seeing it in the context of Krishna, one's actually missed the point of the Vedas. Right? So I said one cannot understand them without engaging the process of devotional service. So only by devotional service can you understand how it connects to the Supreme Lord. Otherwise, you just see it's so, you know, people will read, let's say, Ayurveda. It's just to them just on medicine. It's just medicine. It's about health. And what health? Their body. That's the limit that they see. Right? Even though it's the Lord's, how the Lord in his potencies then interact that create the health of the body. Right? Because Krishna is the body. He's the life airs. He's the senses. He's what the environment you're in. So how all those interact with each other, that creates health or disease. But it'll just be seen as how to be healthy. Right? And being healthy is good, because it said, you know, without being healthy, then you can't, you know, do your service. So we'll just focus on being healthy, and we won't, and that is our service. Right? Makes sense, right?
Complete.
Hmm? Yeah. That's right. Well, they won't let you eat naans either.
That's
That's true.
Yeah, because it's, you know, it's Midas, so, you know, just that's it. You even look at the nun, you'll just shrivel up and die. And,
what about Atenon?
Huh? Atenons.
Is that an oxymoron?
Kind of, yeah. The pastimes of the Supreme Lord are the Vedas. One cannot understand them without engaging the process of devotional service. The pastimes of the Lord are known only to the few followers of Gaurasundara through his mercy. Right? So so that's the acharyas, that's what's so important, because they can reveal what's going on. And you know it, the pastimes are known only by the few followers, by Krishna's mercy. And so by his mercy, then you can come in contact with these followers and then learn. So that has to be how the acharyas are giving, the process they're giving. The Vaishnavas are eternally servants of the Supreme Lord and are highly learned. Right? So they have the character and they have the knowledge. Right? Because just being learned is overrated. Highly learned, that's the standard. Therefore, their pastimes of quarreling amongst themselves is simply a joke. A person who sees such quarrels takes the side of one Vaishnava and blasphemies the other Vaishnava, he will certainly fall down. What to speak of becoming envious of Vaishnavas? One becomes envious of any living entity, not knowing that Lord Vishnu is situated within their hearts, and worships Vishnu with material conceptions. Then his worship becomes useless, and as a result of such enviousness, he attains unlimited miseries. One incurs 100 times more sin by blaspheming a Vaishnava than by torturing other living entities. Therefore, an offender at the feet of a Vaishnava can never achieve any auspiciousness. Those who faithfully worship Vishnu in his deity form, but do not respect the devotees of Vishnu, or do not show compassion towards the living entities, are the lowest class of devotees, or Prakriti Bhaktas. Okay, so Kapila Muni makes that point in the third canto, after explaining the deity worship, that those devotees who don't see, who deal properly with him in the temple, but don't deal with the other living entities and the devotees properly, then they're not actually pleasing him by the worship. Right? They're doing something, so that's nice, but it'll be on the lowest level. After the completion of Vyas Puja, Mahaprabhu instructed the devotees to perform kirtana. Nityananda Prabhu and Mahaprabhu became intoxicated by dancing in the kirtan and displayed various transformations of ecstatic love. Mother Sachi saw the whole incident with great ecstasy. On seeing Nityananda and Gaurasundara, she felt both of them were her own sons. When the Vyas Puja celebration was completed at the end of the day, Mahaprabhu asked Srivas Pandit for the remnants of Vyasadeva's offering and personally distributed them to everyone. The devotees honored this prasad with great happiness. Mahaprabhu also distributed Mahaprasad to the servants and maidservants of Srivas. After completing the Vyas Puja ceremony at the house of Srivas, Sriman Mahaprabhu, along with Nityananda Prabhu and the devotees, constantly remained intoxicated by the chanting of the holy name. One day, right, so Lord Nityananda comes to Mayapur, right, and he shows up, and then by Lord Chaitanya's arrangement, then his glories and all that are established, so they understand his position and all that. And then from then on, we see is that these evening kirtans and then the preaching and all that then is beginning. One day the Lord sent Ramai, the youngest brother of Srivas, to Advaita with the instruction to form Advaita that the Lord whom he worshipped and prayed to in various ways has now appeared in this world to distribute this devotional service. He also instructed Ramai to inform Advaita about Nityananda's arrival in Navadvipa and request Advaita to come with his wife and ingredients for worship. Being ordered by Mahaprabhu, Ramai happily went to the house of Advaita. Due to the influence of devotional service, the omniscient Advaita Prabhu already knew that Ramai was coming to him with Mahaprabhu's instructions. As soon as Advaita saw Ramai, he asked Ramai, "Has Mahaprabhu sent you to bring me?" As Ramai requested Advaita to come to Navadvipa to meet the Lord, Advaita Prabhu became overwhelmed with ecstasy and pretended to be ignorant. He again asked Ramai about the cause of his visit. Ramai then explained in detail the instructions of Mahaprabhu and requested him to come with ingredients for worship. Right? Because it means we would think, you know, what would be the whole thing of playing dumb here? Right? But the point is it's he's omniscient, he knows what's there, but that's just his position as God. Right? But in the pastimes, in interaction, then by hearing about what it is and then what to do and the interaction, that gives much more taste. So you see then for these three Prabhus, then even though they may be omniscient, it's there's more taste in not acting in that capacity. So the sweetness becomes more important. On hearing the words of Ramai, Advaita Prabhu became unconscious with ecstasy. After a while, he regained his external consciousness and roared loudly in jubilation. On hearing the news that Mahaprabhu has revealed himself, Sita Devi, the wife of Advaita, along with son Achyutananda and servants, began to shed tears of love. Once again, Advaita asked Ramai about the instructions of Mahaprabhu, and then informed Ramai about his heartfelt desire. Thereafter, he collected all the necessary ingredients for worship and departed with his wife to see Mahaprabhu. In order to test Mahaprabhu, he forbade Ramai from informing Mahaprabhu about his arrival and instructed Ramai to inform the Lord he has not come. And then Advaita secretly hid in the house of Nandana Acharya. That was the same place that Nityananda Prabhu was, huh?
Yeah.
Seems to be the popular place to hide. Does that mean no one goes to Nandan Acharya's house or something? Lord Vishrambara, who is the supersoul of everyone, understood the mind of Advaita Acharya. And while sitting on the throne of Lord Vishnu, he disclosed to everyone the internal mood of Advaita. Lord Nityananda held an umbrella over the Lord's head. Devotees such as Gadadhar began to offer various services to the Lord, and some of them offered prayers to him. In the meantime, Ramai came and offered obeisance to Mahaprabhu and informed him about the resolution of Advaita. Then the Lord again ordered Ramai to bring Advaita to him. Being ordered by Mahaprabhu, Ramai again went to the house of Nandan Acharya to bring Advaita Prabhu and informed Advaita Prabhu about everything what the Lord has said. Advaita Prabhu then came with his wife before Mahaprabhu, and while offering obeisances and prayers in ecstasy, he beheld the extraordinarily wonderful opulences of the Lord. When Advaita Acharya became speechless and stunned by seeing the influence of Mahaprabhu, the most merciful Vishrambara elaborately described the truth about himself to Advaita. Thereafter, Advaita began to chant the glories of Mahaprabhu's unparalleled glories and compassion. Being ordered by the Lord, he washed Mahaprabhu's lotus feet and worshipped him with five ingredients. Then Advaita offered his respectful obeisances to Sri Gaurasundara, who is non-different from the son of Nanda Maharaj, by chanting verses such as Namo Brahmanya Devaya. Finally, while glorifying Mahaprabhu, Advaita Acharya concluded that he is non-different from Krishna. He is the reservoir of all incarnations, and he has appeared to inaugurate the Sankirtan movement. Then Mahaprabhu instructed Advaita to dance in kirtan, and as all the devotees started an ecstatic kirtan, Advaita Prabhu became overwhelmed in dancing. Then Nityananda and Advaita Prabhu exhibited their eternal, extraordinary, transcendental love for the service of Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu by enacting their pastime of quarreling with each other. On seeing the dancing of Advaita Prabhu, all the Vaishnavas became jubilant. When Advaita Prabhu stopped dancing on the order of Mahaprabhu, the Lord took his garland and put it on Advaita Prabhu and ordered him to ask for a benediction. Advaita Prabhu expressed his appreciation for his good fortune of being able to see Mahaprabhu and then requested Mahaprabhu to award Krishna Prema, which is rare for even great personalities like Brahma. Okay. then requested Mahaprabhu to award Krishna Prema, which is rare for even great personalities like Brahma, to award it to everyone, including women, shudras, and fools, with the exception of the Vaishnava aparadis, who are intoxicated by the pride of education, wealth, and high birth. Right. So there seems to be a pattern here.
Seems to be consistency.
Yeah, there's a yeah. Sri Gaurasundar agreed to the request of Advaita. This prayer of Advaitacharya later bore abundant fruits. Thereafter, Advaitacharya continued to live in Navadvip with his wife. Because he would have his place there, then he was living in Shantipur. Then at this point, then Lord Chaitanya asked him to come back, then he was living in Navadvip. Sri Nityananda Prabhu continued to reside at the house of Shivas in Sridhar Mayapur. At that time, he constantly remained absorbed in the mood of a child. And Malini Devi served Nityananda as her own son. One day, when Mahaprabhu called out the name of his dear associate, Pundarik Vidyanidhi, and began to cry, the devotees could not understand his intention and inquired about this from Mahaprabhu. The Lord informed the devotees about the identity of Vidyanidhi, and also informed them that Vidyanidhi would soon arrive in Sri Mayapur. Pundarik Vidyanidhi came and enacted the pastimes of a gross materialist while secretly residing in Navadvip. Since Mukunda, the best of the Vaishnavas, appeared in Chattagram, he was conversant with the glories of Vidyanidhi. As the indwelling supersoul, Mahaprabhu was happy to know of Pundarik's arrival, but he did not disclose the news to anyone. Vasudeva and Mukunda were fully acquainted with the glories of Pundarik Vidyanidhi. One day, promising to show him a wonderful Vaishnava, Mukunda took Garadhara to Vidyanidhi, who inquired from Mukunda about the identity of Garadhara. When Mukunda informed Vidyanidhi about the identity of Garadhara, Vidyanidhi became very pleased and began to converse with him. On seeing Vidyanidhi's activities, such as chewing betel nuts, like a materialist while sitting on an opulent throne, Garadhara, who was renounced since his birth, became somewhat doubtful. At that time, Mukunda, who knew very well the heart of Garadhara, recited a verse from Srimad Bhagavatam indicating the glories of Sri Krishna. As soon as Pundarik heard this verse, he could not control himself. He fell unconscious to the ground due to love of God, and various transformations of ecstatic love manifested in his body. By his kicking, all the surrounding items were scattered here and there. On realizing Vidyanidhi's exalted position, Garadhara began to repent on account of being disrespectful to him, and proposed to Mukunda that he would counteract his offense by taking initiation from Vidyanidhi. Learning the intentions of Garadhara, Mukunda became happy and praised him. After about 6 hours, Vidyanidhi regained his external consciousness. When Vidyanidhi saw that Garadhara's eyes were filled with tears, he embraced him affectionately, and Garadhara stood there with great awe and reverence. Thereafter, when Mukunda informed Vidyanidhi about Garadhara's desire, Vidyanidhi happily praised his own good fortune for receiving such a disciple. He then fixed an auspicious day for awarding initiation to Garadhara. One time, late at night, Vidyanidhi came to Mahaprabhu, and due to ecstatic love, could not offer obeisances to the Lord. He fell unconscious to the ground, and after regaining consciousness shortly thereafter, began to cry with various words of lamentation. On seeing his dearmost devotee, Mahaprabhu also began to cry while uttering his name. Mahaprabhu embraced Vidyanidhi and shed tears of love. Thereafter, when Mahaprabhu regained his external consciousness, he introduced Vidyanidhi to all the Vaishnavas and profusely glorified him. After regaining external consciousness, Vidyanidhi offered obeisances to Mahaprabhu and showed due respects to the assembled Vaishnavas. When Garadhar begged Mahaprabhu's permission to take initiation from Vidyanidhi in order to counteract the offense of disregarding Vidyanidhi, the Lord happily gave his approval. Thereafter, Garadhar took initiation from Vidyanidhi. When Mahaprabhu was engaged in enjoying various pastimes in Navadvipa, Nityananda Prabhu lived at the house of Srivas. Due to constantly remaining in the mood of a child, Nityananda did not eat with his own hand, so Malini affectionately fed him like her own son. In order to test Srivas, Mahaprabhu one day asked him why he allowed Avadhut Nityananda, whose caste and character were unknown, to live in his house. In order, because, you know, being a Brahmin and all that, then, you know, you someone staying at your house, living there and everything, so, you know. So then, you know, you should know something about them. So he's saying he's an Avadhut. So you don't even know who he is, what his character, what caste he is. One day, Mahaprabhu asked him why he allowed Avadhut Nityananda, whose caste and character were unknown, to live in his house in order to protect the prestige of his family and caste. You should not allow him to stay in his house. In answer to this, Srivas informed Mahaprabhu, the one who has worshipped Mahaprabhu for even a day is certainly dear to him. Moreover, Nityananda Prabhu is non-different from Mahaprabhu. Even if Nityananda held a pot of wine and associated with prostitutes, or even if he destroyed Srivas's caste, life, and wealth, still Srivas's faith in Nityananda would not be disturbed for even a moment. On seeing Srivas's firm faith in Nityananda, Mahaprabhu became greatly pleased and gave him the benediction that even if Lakshmi Devi happened to beg at any time, Srivas would not face any poverty. And even the cats and dogs in the house of Srivas would have unflinching devotion to Mahaprabhu. Right, so he would always have facilities in that. Even if Lakshmi Devi herself had to go and beg, he would have. You know, but you know, we know that she'll never have that problem. Yeah. Thereafter, so anyone connected to him, so even the cats and dogs that were, you know, because like you see in India, you always have the dogs running around and that. So then, you know, they're around, they'll feed them like that, and so then that will be their dog. They don't, you know, does that make sense? That's the house dog. He lives outside and he runs around outside. Cats are the same. Thereafter, Mahaprabhu entrusted Srivas with the full responsibility of caring for Nityananda and returned home. Nityananda Prabhu continued to wander throughout Nadia. Sometimes he swam in the water of the Ganges, and sometimes he enjoyed unlimited bliss by floating in the current of the Ganges. Sometimes he would visit the houses of Murari or Gangadas, and sometimes he would go to the house of Mahaprabhu. Whenever Mother Sachi saw Nityananda, she showed him great affection. When Nityananda, in the mood of a child, tried to touch the lotus feet of Mother Sachi, she immediately ran away. One day, Mother Sachi had a wonderful dream. While narrating the subject matter of the dream to Mahaprabhu, she said that both Mahaprabhu and Nityananda entered the temple of Vishnu as 5-year-old boys. Then Nityananda held Krishna and Mahaprabhu held Balaram. And they began to quarrel with each other. In anger, Balaram and Krishna asked Gaura and Nittai to leave the temple room because they were unauthorized. Nityananda replied that in the previous Dwapara Yuga, Krishna and Balaram had full authority to perform all pastimes. But in the present Kali Yuga, they had no right whatsoever. Therefore, Gaura and Nittai alone were qualified to accept all the offerings. Both Balaram and Krishna then said that they would bind Gaura and Nittai, confine them to the temple room, and leave. In this way, they went on quarreling and began to eat the foodstuffs that they snatched from each other. When Nityananda Prabhu addressed Sachimata as mother and begged her for rice to mitigate his hunger, Mother Sachi's dream came to an end. After Mahaprabhu heard the description of the dream from Mother Sachi, he forbade her to disclose it to anyone. The Lord said the deities of her house were directly the personality of Godhead, and they eat half the food offered to them. He previously had some doubt whether Lakshmi Priya was eating that portion of the offering. Because whatever they would offer, when the offering was finished, half would be gone. But now that doubt was removed from his mind. Thereafter, Nityananda should be invited and fed. Thereafter, Mahaprabhu went to Nityananda, and while inviting him for lunch, The Lord forbade him from manifesting any kind of restlessness. In answer to this, Nityananda said that only a madman plays mischief, and Mahaprabhu thinks that everyone is like himself. While speaking in this way, they both arrived at the house of Mahaprabhu and sat down together with their intimate associates headed by Garadhara. After Mahaprabhu and Nityananda Prabhu washed their feet with the water offered by Ishana, they both sat down together to eat their meal. Because that's like you see also when it's mentioning about in the Bhogarti, that Krishna and Balaram, they come, they wash their hands, feet, then they sit like this, and afterwards then they wash and things like this. That's the standard, because it said if you wash your hands and feet, then you eat, then that's considered pious. Like that. Mahaprabhu and Nityananda Prabhu appeared just like Sri Ramachandra and Lakshmana. When Mother Sachi served them food on three plates, they began to laugh. On seeing the characteristics of Krishna and Balaram in the bodies of Gornitai, Mother Sachi fell unconscious to the ground, whereupon Mahaprabhu helped her regain consciousness. In order to perform various pastimes in Nadia, Mahaprabhu visited the houses of the devotees and manifested his different forms to the different devotees. One day, as a singer played a small drum and sang the glories of Lord Shiva, Mahaprabhu manifested the mood of Lord Shiva and climbed on the singer's shoulders. Later, after regaining his external consciousness, the Lord got down from his shoulders and gave him sufficient alms. The singer was very pleased and returned home. Thereafter, Mahaprabhu called his associates and expressed his desire to perform Sankirtana every night. According to the Lord's desire, the pastimes of Sankirtana began. On hearing the Sankirtana, the atheists began to criticize and spread rumors in various ways. When Mahaprabhu fell forcefully to the ground during the kirtan, Mother Sachi became worried and prayed to Krishna. Quote, although Mahaprabhu does not feel any pain while falling forcefully to the ground, an affectionate mother cannot tolerate it. Therefore, may he not feel any pain. End quote. Mahaprabhu realized the internal mood of his mother. So from that time on, Mother Sachi remained fully absorbed during the Lord's Samkirtan pastimes and would not know anything. Right? So then he could perform his pastimes, he might fall on the ground and that. But because she was so absorbed in the kirtan and remembering, you know, the pastimes of Krishna and Balaram like that, then she wouldn't notice what's happening. As a tumultuous kirtan was begun in the courtyard of Srivas, on the day of Sri Harivasara, Mahaprabhu began to manifest various transformations of ecstatic love. Since by the order of Mahaprabhu, the door of Srivas' house was locked from inside during the performance of Sankirtana, the atheists were unable to enter the house and began criticizing Mahaprabhu and his associates with various harsh statements, right? So if they come in, they'll criticize. If they stay out, they'll criticize. So better they stay out and criticize, because at least they don't bother the kirtan. Because the other way means that we're saying, oh, but they'll criticize, but at least then you can still do kirtan. That goes nicely, and then they criticize. But the other way is they'll criticize anyone and disturb the kirtan. The devotees of Mahaprabhu ignored such statements and remained intoxicated in the pastimes of Sankirtana. So Sankirtana just means getting together, like that. Then you also, it's going out on the street and taking it out there. So the Sankirtana move goes out on the street. But it's not that when devotees get together and do kirtan, that's also Sankirtana. That's, you know, it just means everyone together doing kirtan. Just as the long night of the Rasa Leela pastimes appeared as a fraction of a second to the gopis, the devotees who were intoxicated by Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan pastimes passed their nights absorbed in the same way. So you think, how do they go out? For them, it just went very quickly. It just went in a moment. One day after kirtan, Mahaprabhu took all the Shaligram Shilas on his lap and sat on the throne of Lord Vishnu. He then manifested his glories to the devotees and began to eat the various foodstuffs offered by them. In this way, after the Lord ate foodstuffs sufficient to feed 200 people, he began demanding more food. The devotees were unable to offer any more foodstuffs, so they simply offered him some betel nuts. Thereafter, Mahaprabhu requested Advaita Prabhu to ask for a benediction. In this way, after some time, the Lord fell unconscious to the ground. Later on, he regained external consciousness and began to perform kirtan. In this way, Mahaprabhu continued his ecstatic pastimes in Navadvipa. One day, Mahaprabhu came with Nityananda to the house of Shivas. Understanding the mood of the Lord, all the assembled devotees began to perform kirtan. Sri Gaurasundara, who is the supreme teacher of everyone, regularly danced in the kirtan in the mood of a devotee. Yet in his own mood, he sometimes sat on the throat of Vishnu, as if unaware of what he was doing. On this day, however, the Supreme Lord Sri Gaurasundara concealed his mood as a devotee, and with a desire to accept the service of his surrendered devotees, he sat on the throne of Vishnu for 21 hours and revealed that he is personally Lord Vishnu, the shelter of all devotees. In this Mahaprakash pastime, he manifested all the forms of Vishnu incarnations. Right, so you see, sometimes he would just sit there anyway, and like that time he ate all the food and that. That's not the Mahaprakash. That was a very specific, but he would regularly do that, you know, that kind of thing. So this day, the others, he would be unaware, or like this, he would just do, then he'd go back in his mood as a devotee and this and that. But this day, he specifically didn't manifest the mood as a devotee, he was just the Supreme Lord. This day, in response to the Lord's gesture, the devotees happily worship Sri Gaura Narayan, who is the Lord of Vaikuntha and full in six opulences, with various ingredients through the performance of the Abhishek ceremony meant for the King of Kings. After worshipping Mahaprabhu with 16 ingredients, according to the prescriptions of the 10-syllable Gopal mantra, the devotees offered various prayers and described his transcendental qualities and pastimes by glorifying him as the cause of all causes, the controller of all controllers, and the Lord who has accepted the mood of a devotee to manifest his own service for delivering the fallen souls. Right, so this whole point of the very opulent Abhisheks and that, the worship of the six items, these are just standard ways of doing things. So we see the devotees know all this, they do all these things. I mentioned before, Advaitacharya came. Mahaprabhu had told him to bring the paraphernalia, ingredients and all that. And so he came and he offered the five items. You know, so depending if it's in the beginning of the thing, it would be, you know, the asana, swagatam, padyamargim, achmaniyam, but most in here, since he's already there, he's sitting, then it would be gandapushpa dup deep naivedya. Right? Yeah. So, like that, then he's doing. So, it's a standard thing. So, to say, oh, this is ritualistic, this and that, we don't get into all those things, that's not our line. You know, there may be people who want to, you know, deal in these kind of ways, but generally that's the Sahajya line. They just don't care for rules, they don't care for authority, they don't care for the scriptures. It's just however they feel. Right? Thereafter, Sri Gaurasundara spontaneously extended his lotus feet to be worshipped, and all the devotees worshipped his lotus feet with various accumulated ingredients according to their respective desires. With a desire to accept the service of his devotees, Mahaprabhu also happily ate various foodstuffs offered by them and began to describe previous experiences of the devotees headed by Srivas. Right, so, yeah. This also is, this is the pastime that's described in the evening artik, the Gaura artik song. Right, so it's used as our, you know, how we're worshipping the Lord. Later, after the devotees finished offering evening artik, Sri Gaurasundara instructed the devotees to bring his dearmost devotee, Sridhara, in order to exhibit his pastimes of opulence to him. As the Vaishnavas followed the Lord's instruction, covered half the distance, they heard Sridhara loudly chanting the holy name of Hari. By following that sound, they came to his house. Right, so half the distance to his house, they could hear him chanting. He was chanting so loud. Although according to external characteristics, Sridhara was extremely poor. Since he was a transcendental devotee of Mahaprabhu, he was eternally enriched with the treasure of Krishna Prema. The extraordinary example of service to the Lord exhibited in this world by the destitute Kolabecha Sridhara, who is as truthful as Yudhishthira, is meant to be followed by everyone. The atheist thought that Sridhar remained awake and chanted the name of the Lord throughout the night due to being afflicted by poverty and hunger. And that's why he was doing it, right? Because then by worshiping the Lord, then, you know, if the Lord was kind, then he would get, you know, opulences and facilities and everything like that. And that's why he was so fervently worshiping the Lord. So then they would figure that's what's going on. They didn't understand it was actually devotion. Right? Because we see in the others, when they're doing kirtan and that and the devotion, they're getting upset. But they're thinking he's doing it because of, you know, interest in wealth, so therefore, it's okay. They did not know that Sridhar was constantly engaged in the service of the husband of Lakshmi Devi, the predominating deity of all opulences. Therefore, he can never actually be afflicted by poverty. Sridhar did not pay any attention to the statements of the atheist, but constantly remained absorbed in drinking the nectar of Krishna's holy names. At night, he eagerly prayed to the Lord for the spiritual benefit of himself and the entire world. As soon as Sridhar heard the name of Mahaprabhu from the devotees, he lost consciousness out of ecstasy. The devotees then carefully brought him before Mahaprabhu. On seeing Sridhara, Mahaprabhu became greatly pleased. And Sridhara also became overwhelmed by seeing the Lord's most enchanting transcendental form. During the Lord's pastimes as a student, Sridhara passed his life by selling banana leaves, banana flowers, and banana stems, in order to establish that the Supreme Lord happily accepts the offering of his devotees, but does not even look at the offerings of non-devotees. Mahaprabhu would forcibly snatch those items from Sridhara, and as a result, even quarreled with him. Mahaprabhu reminded Sridhara about those pastimes and expressed his desire to award him the eight kinds of mystic perfection. Thereafter, Mahaprabhu displayed his extraordinary opulence to Sridhara. As soon as Sridhara saw that display, he was struck with wonder and fell unconscious to the ground. When, on Sriman Mahaprabhu's order, Sridhara regained his external consciousness, Mahaprabhu instructed him to offer prayers. After Sridhar humbly expressed his inability to offer prayers to Mahaprabhu on the pretext of ignorance, the Lord ordered Shuddha Saraswati to manifest on the tongue of Sridhara. And thus, Sridhara began to offer wonderful prayers to Mahaprabhu. Being pleased by the prayers of Sridhara, Mahaprabhu asked him to accept any benediction he wanted, right? So this is Divya Saraswati. So she's the consort of Vishnu. So she's giving all that. What we see is the Digvijay Pandit, that was Saraswati of this world, the demigods, the wife of Brahma. Right. She'll be in the bigger expansion, I think, of the eight. But they'll go back to the three, so who she goes back to, can't say, because you have knowledge and all that, so you would think it would go to Nila. But at the same time, as you have chit, means knowledge, you know, and so that could also mean Bu. So being pleased by the prayers of Sridhara, Mahaprabhu asked him to accept any benediction he wanted. Sridhara asked for the benediction that he who regularly quarreled with him, Sridhara, over banana leaves and flowers may remain his Lord birth after birth. When Mahaprabhu desired to make Sridhar the emperor, Sridhar did not accept, but rather prayed for the qualification to glorify the Lord's transcendental qualities. Right, so then we would have had that instead of Akbar, then we would have had Sridhar as the emperor. But he said, no.
Nice try.
Yeah. The devotees of Sri Gaura do not hanker for any material object. They simply pray for the transcendental service of the Lord. Persons who have received Gaurasundara's merciful glance know that religiosity, economic development, sense gratification, or the eight mystic perfections, and even liberation are most abominable and insignificant. And thus they simply desire the service of the lotus feet of Krishna. They do not desire their own sense gratification. Vaishnava cannot be recognized by his external features. People who are intoxicated with pride due to material assets cannot understand the glories of the opulence and wealth of Sridhar, who is an exalted transcendental Vaishnava. Although, from the material point of view, it may appear that the Vaishnavas are deficient, they actually have no deficiency. Although Vaishnavas appear in poor families within this world to teach the fallen and wretched living entities to worship Hari, they are not actually poor. The purpose of such pastimes is to demonstrate how one can worship Hari in spite of being born in a poor family. The characteristics of Vaishnavas are incomprehensible to the materialists. One surrenders to the Vaishnavas with non-duplicitous simplicity. Then, by their mercy, one can recognize them. It is the duty of every intelligent man to stay far away from the Vaishnava apparata of trying to measure Vaishnavas with material knowledge. A person who is devoid of Vaishnava aparad can easily attain love of God by chanting the holy name of Krishna, even once. Otherwise, nama aparad in the form of blaspheming Vaishnavas will create havoc in one's life. Then, Sridhar, do you remember who he was and what Gorgana Deshtipika says? Who he was? Sorry?
Sudama Vipra.
Oh, okay. Okay, so the same thing of being poor and that.
One of the Gopals, too, though.
After awarding benediction to Sridhara, Mahaprabhu requested Advaitacharya to ask for some benediction. Advaita, however, simply prayed to the Lord to award him his desired goal of life, but did not openly ask for any benediction. Thereafter, Mahaprabhu displayed the form of Sri Ram with his associates to Murari Gupta and reminded Murari of his previous identity. As Murari Gupta realized his own form as Hanuman, he fell unconscious to the ground. Later on, he regained his external consciousness by the words of the Lord and prayed for the benediction of being able to eternally serve Lord Chaitanya and his associates. Remember the lotus feet of Lord Chaitanya and sing the glories of Lord Chaitanya. The Lord awarded this benediction to Murari and declared that anyone who blasphemes Murari will not be delivered even if he takes millions of baths in the Ganges and chants the holy name of Hari. Thereafter, the Lord revealed the meaning of the name Murari Gupta.
Kusamasava.
Oh, okay. Okay, so Vrindavan is Kusamasava, and then Dwarka, he's Sudama Vipra.
Kusamasava?
Yeah, he's one of the 12 Gopals.
Is it the same in Manumata? Because this is one of his names.
I'm not sure.
Okay.
I don't know. Mahaprabhu then instructed Haridas to behold his form. Mahaprabhu declared that Haridas was more dear to him than his own self and that he and Haridas belonged to the same family. On seeing the distress of Haridas, the Lord had descended from Vaikuntha with the Sudarshan Chakra in his hand. But since Haridas desired auspiciousness for even his oppressors, the Sudarshan Chakra desisted and Mahaprabhu took the beating of Haridas on his own body. After exhibiting those marks, of torture on his own body, Mahaprabhu further said that he was unable to tolerate the distress of Haridas, so he incarnated immediately. Lord Krishna, who is controlled by his devotees, does not know anything except his devotees. One who has no love for the holy names of Krishna, who is so affectionate towards his devotees, is simply suffering the results of his own misfortune. On hearing that, yes, so if we have no taste for the holy name, it's just the results of our own misfortune. It's not somebody else, you know. It's not that we didn't get enough halava or, you know, anything else.
Can't really get enough halava.
But it's still not an excuse.
Got it.
Okay. On hearing the topics of the Lord's unlimited mercy, Haridas fell unconscious to the ground. Although he regained his external consciousness by the words of the Lord, he became agitated and began to cry. Thus he could not see the form of the Lord. With great humility, Haridas offered prayers to Mahaprabhu and said that the most merciful Gaurasundara never abandons even an insect who remembers his lotus feet, but he destroys even an emperor who does not remember his lotus feet. In this regard, Haridas cited the examples of Draupadi, Prahlad, Yudhishthira, who feared the curse of Durvasa, and Ajamiyo, and thus established the supremacy of Gaurasundara's affection for his surrendered devotees. After expressing his total incompetence, Haridas simply prayed to the Lord that he may develop a taste for honoring the remnants of Lord Chaitanya's servants, that this may be his only form of worship, birth after birth, and that Mahaprabhu may keep him as a dog in the house of his devotee. Mahaprabhu, who constantly resides in the heart of Haridas, then awarded Haridas the benediction of pure devotional service, devoid of offenses against Lord Vishnu and the Vaishnavas, and declared, quote, anyone who associates with Haridas for even a moment and has full faith in Haridas will certainly attain my lotus feet. End quote. It is taught in all scriptures that by hearing the glories of the devotees, one attains devotional service to Krishna. According to the opinion of some persons, Haridas is an incarnation of Brahma, and according to others, he is an incarnation of Prahlad. His association is desired by even Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, and his touch is desired even by the Ganges. Moreover, simply by the darshan of Haridas, one's bondage of fruitive activities from time immemorial is at once severed. In order to establish the supremacy of the Vaishnavas occasionally manifest the pastime of taking birth in a low family. Low-class family, yes.
Does this mean that the incarnation could be either Brahma or Prahlad?
Why can't it be both?
No, but that's what my question.
I mean, it's just a matter of both those moods will be there, just
yeah.
Like we see in Jagannath Mishra and Sachimata.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's also, it means they're Nanda and Jashoda, but they're also Devaki and Vasudev. They're also, who is that, Prishni?
Sutapta
and Prishni. Like this, so all the, and I think also then Aditi and Kasyapa, like this. So all the parents of the Lord in any pastime, also Dasarat, you know, and Kaushalya, like this. So they're all there, and so the main mood will be that of Mother Jashoda. But you see, is at times in the pastimes there'll be other flavors are there. So that's the point. Yes.
The difficulty seems to be in some combinations is that Sachi and Jagannath Mishra, they match it's you know, all Vatsalya, different manifestation of Vatsalya.
Yes, yes.
But then sometimes it just doesn't match, like, you know, Arjuna and one of the Sakis, and it's in one person, so it's...
You have a line of expansion, right? You have Radha and Krishna, and then you have the Yogpeet, which will mean the Astasaki, it means as they stand around them.
Yes.
So those Astasaki will be in the eight directions,
yes.
Right? And so from there, then everything will go out from there. So your Dwarka Leela, your Vaikuntha Leela, the demigods, like when you have the Vastu Mandala, then you have certain demigods in those directions. You know, it's just like, even in the regular, you know, Indra's in the east, Varuna's in the west, Yama in the south, Kuvera in the north. So all these are coming from the Astasaki, and then their expansions and their, you know, assistance and things like this as it goes. So in that way, whatever is there, any of these things, there'll be a common line. It just may be what is the particular combination. So then it'll be the mood will be manifest at whatever times it is. So for some, they'll say he's manifesting the mood of Prahlad as the main one, and Brahma will be the occasional. Some will say it's Brahma with Prahlad as the occasional. You know, it's just like Nandan, it means Satchimata, and it will be Mother Jashoda, but sometimes you see the other pastimes are also there. You know, like that one with Lakshman, the Raman, like that, or yeah. Does that make sense? So that way, then there's that connection there, because everybody has to come from them. Everybody's expanded from them. Is that, yeah. So it's just a matter of, you know, that particular combination gives that particular personality. They take part in certain pastimes. So. Yeah, works? Like that. So therefore, there is not a contradiction. It's just different aspects, different flavors.
So can we say that line is going, but we don't see that connection in that line? We don't know. I mean, we can say the origin maybe, but how it expands, we're not sure. So
no,
the expansion makes the combination.
Yes, because it may come down through here, go there, because all these things are coming. So that's the point, is in these pastimes, because they're Brahmins, they're doing that kind of pastime, then it has a particular mood. While Dorka has another mood, Vrindavan has a different mood. Does that make sense? So it's all the same people. It's just you have different moods, different flavors. Right? Because one is performing the duties within the context of the Vaishyas, one is within the Kshatriya. The Kshatriya is the other, is within the Brahmins. Does that make sense? So the Kshatriya then has that aspect of the majesty. While Vrindavan and Navadvip don't. Right? But we see as Navadvip, as Swetadvip, then it has these some flavors of the other realms. That's why I say Lord Chaitanya shows all the different forms of the Lord according to who they're worshiping. You know, when he was sitting on the altar. So, you know, because we see in the pastime, sometimes it manifests as Varaha, sometimes as Nrisinga, sometimes like this. So you're going to get all these different aspects that will be there. And so then it has that unique aspect. So the core is the sweetness in Vrindavan. But it doesn't mean that the other aspect, especially as Gaur Narayan, that you don't have the other aspects manifesting. So these pastimes for here will be that of Gaur Narayan. But we see is already that aspect of tasting that love for Krishna has already started after his, you know, going to Gaya. Something sense.
Another difficulty is that sometimes it seems like a blend of Tatastha, then Vishnu Tattva, and the Shakti Tattva. It's all blended together. So
they have to come. Means Shakti Tattva is all coming from Vishnu Tattva, and Jiva Tattva is coming from Shakti. No? When you have the Srup Shakti,
yes,
which is complete Shakti, then there's three aspects.
Right.
So jivas are one of them. So that means jivas are coming from, like that. Does that make sense? So there's one Sarup Shakti, but it has those three kind of flavors.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Sambandha, Abhidaya, and Prayojana.
Yes.
Right? So then from the chit aspect, that is where the jivas come from. Does that make sense? And then having come from there, then they may work under the, you know, internal potency in any of these three features. So that makes sense. So some will be more connected with Sandini, some Vis, some Vladini. You know. So that makes sense.
Yeah.
So that's why it's said that there's unlimited energies.
Some of the energies come.
Yes, they're coming out.
They come more or less at the same time. There's a difference like 2-3 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah, no, they're quite regular.
More regular.
Yeah, I guess having to get their wings ready or something. And I think, do I look good? You know, wish me luck.
Also, there's mention that our joke pit, the Astasakis and Astamanjaris, but we don't see the Manjaris, so where are the Manjaris?
They're next to the Sakis. Mm.
So they accompany the Sakis?
Yeah, in that formal arrangement. So who's with who, then that will be.
That will match.
Yeah. Because these kind of things aren't things that are understood. We may, as we say, is we'll discuss it from the point of it just being a pastime. But how much is it discussed from it being, you know, the understanding of the philosophy, the tattva, and those kind of things. So very rare that kind of discussion is there. So that kind of aspect isn't appreciated. Because then you get who does what are the flavors and all that. Because that's what expands from there.
So the question, should we discuss it from the tattva point? Because devotees usually...
As it comes up, you know, as it comes up. The point is when it comes up, then it's there. But even it comes up, we don't necessarily notice it.
Right.
It's because we're not, you know, not trained in it, so we don't understand it. So it's not a matter of... It's just like as we're going through, the sandarbhas and then the purports and all that, then we see that, you know, this technical knowledge is there. At the same time as then when we see Prabhupada's purports, the terminology he uses is exactly the same that he always uses. So we've heard it, you know, thousands of times, but it didn't mean anything to us.
Yeah.
Then as we come through and by Prabhupada's grace, then by serving the acharyas, then you start to see this. If you have that aspect. If you don't, if you just think, well, I know all these technical things, then you fall into the trap of what it's saying here. Then you become intoxicated by the knowledge. Then you can't see. So the main point is how do you understand if that's there? Is if you can take what Jiva Goswami is there and explain it in Prabhupada's words, say Prabhupada's saying that, and they're good with that. That means then they understand. They're saying, no, the difference here, they're using this word, Prabhupada's using that, it's different. They're intoxicated by knowledge. Does that make sense? You know, and to various degrees. Point is because it might be working in some way. So it's just in this area there might be a weakness. And if for some of them, then it's a big problem and they actually go away. You know, or go off in other lines and this and that because there's more over there or something like that. So it's one has to be very, very careful. It's something that it's revealed knowledge. It's not that you can study it and therefore you know it. It's by worshipping the Lord through the study of the scriptures, that's how it will be revealed in the association of devotees. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Like that. So it's a very specific thing. It doesn't have anything to do with academic ability. It has to do with faith. So if someone has that good intellect and everything like that, and they have that, they're highly learned, so they have the character, when they study all these things, they know so much. And at the same time, you see the character. Because the main quality of knowledge is humility. That's the symptom. So if you see humility, then you know they actually have knowledge. But if you see pride, then you see they don't. So they don't have knowledge. But you may see in something else, then they have that. Just in this one area. Because it's just... It's specific culture that's there. The parampara coming down. The authority coming down. And so... At least from the non-Vedic cultures, there's no concept of that really so much. You know what I'm saying? There's supposed to be. It's always there. It's talked about. You know, at least in the religious lines and things like that. But it's not necessarily that it's a strong feature. Because nowadays you're being told that, you know, you can figure it out. You understand. You'll make it happen, you know. When actually, no, it never works like that. You put in the endeavor, it's a proper endeavor, you get the results. Right? You know, you put the appropriate toast, or the proper side is in the toaster, and it's plugged in, and you push the thing down, and you have the patience to wait, you know, then you get toast. But if you put the, you know, wrong bread, the wrong thing in there, you try to stick your, you know, ice cream in there to warm it up, it's a little too hard. You know, it's not going to work. So you have to, you follow just what, that's why we're following in the footsteps, then it works. So different devotees as a society, they will, they, that means in general, yes, everyone's following the same general thing, but they may be more developed in following in certain areas. So one area they'll be very strong, another area they may be weak in. So that's the whole point, is you take that area that's strong and go with that. And the areas that are weak, you just finesse it.
Good strategy.
Yeah. Well, that's the way it works. You know what I'm saying? That's the whole point in the society. That way you get all the association you need. It's just you're taking it from, you know, it's like the Madhukari. You know, you take it a little from everywhere. So wherever you find it, then it's taken from there. Set. Okay, so answer. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi.